This is Say the Words, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer X-Men movieverse crossover fic, written by Faith Unbreakable, read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13, takes place post-Chosen for Buffy, and takes place between the movies X-Men Origins Wolverine and X-Men 1. Part 1. Say the Words. Buffy sighed as she pressed her forehead against the cool pane of glass, only vaguely aware of the scenery rushing by outside. She was running again. At least, that was what her friends would say when they found her gone, clothes and weapons packed. But this time, there was no goodbye note, and no coming back. Buffy Summers had left the building of wishes and dreams, lies and delusions she had built around herself over the course of a decade. It had been a silly thing to do. But then, she was famous for doing silly things, running off half-cocked. Her plan B usually consisted of twice the amount of violence of plan A, and that was pretty much who she was. But 10 years ago, that had all changed when she'd found a watcher in front of her door, blathering on and on about how she was the Slayer. She'd snorted at him, told him to shove off. She'd been a potential once, she knew that, but that had been a long, long time ago, and there was no way for her to finally be called after all these years. Except that there was. As the oracles kindly informed her, some smart-ass demon had tried to wipe out the line by killing all the potentials off, and so the Slayer essence had been in a bit of a tight spot upon the death of its host. The choice had been between ending the line and jumping into a girl that had been inactive for over 2 centuries. Door 2 it had been, and so Buffy had been called. So far, so bad. She could have just slayed for a while, let herself be killed, and disappear off the radar again, but no, she'd had to have the whole 9 yards. And so she'd gone and found Joycey. She talked the poor woman into playing her mother, and moved atop the Hellmouth. She'd pretended to be a 16-year-old girl. She'd slayed evil, she'd fallen in love, well, almost. It had gone downhill from there. Now, 10 years later, Buffy could admit that. It had been childish and idiotic to try and be someone she wasn't, and tried she had. She'd made friends and found boys to care for, because that's what they all were in her eyes. Even Angel, who had hidden away from the world for all its existence, feeding upon humans or saving them but never taking part in their lives, forgetting about the friends she already had and the one man she really wanted. And one after the other, they had all left, taken aback by her behavior, chased off by glimpses of who she was, or just plain tired and scared of her life. She tried to hold things together, fought so hard, told them all she loved them. She'd said the words to every one of them, trying to tie them to her, and she had failed, like she was destined to, because she was a freak and an accident, an abomination. But even after a full 200 years, there was still the innocent girl in her that wanted nothing but to be accepted. But the rest of her was a seasoned warrior, and not at all good with keeping people around. So things had degenerated. But it wasn't until the Hellmouth was closed and the Scoobies had time to finally face the outside world that the troubles had really started. They had taken to the mutant problem like ducks to water, finding a new enemy, a new face to put to their troubles. They weren't out to kill all the mutants, mind you, but the prejudice and propaganda spewing from the lips of her family had been the final straw for Buffy. Charade over. She'd gotten to play the girl for a decade. Now, it was time to go home, face who and what she really was, and get her ass into gear. She wasn't the only one anymore. Mutants were everywhere now, unlike they had been when she'd been a kid and they needed help. If there was one thing that was true for both Buffy Summers and the once and future Elizabeth Winter, it was that she had a saving people thing. And so she watched the landscape blur past outside, as she twisted her wrist a bit in her lap, out and down, and slowly time around her picked up speed. In less than an hour, she'd be at Xavier's school for the gifted. Time to see how good old Chuck was doing. Part 2. Wordlessly. He loved the cold, and he loved the north. A place wasn't home unless winter lasted at least 6 months, and she got lost in the snowdrifts at least once a year. He never got lost. He was like an animal in the woods, smelling, tracking, seeing things that she couldn't even guess at. And so every time he dropped out of nowhere into the middle of the woods, giving her his sexiest predator grin, she called him her wolf. He'd sleep her off her feet, growling playfully and throwing her over his shoulder, to carry her back home and ravish her. That was how they played the game. It was who they were. Two people, not quite human, living in a world that was filled with snow and trees and roaring fireplaces. A world where there were no other people around. No one to judge and no mob to come after them with pitchforks. They spent their days laughing and lounging in bed and acting like silly young lovers. That was what she loved most about him. The way that, even after 20, 30, 50 years, she still felt like a lovesick teenage girl in his arms, even though she remembered neither being a teenager nor lovesick, ever. But then, she didn't remember all that much before 1875, because that was the year she'd first met him, and he was the one who'd given the time, streams, and loops, the slow and fast winding river she floated on, meaning. His face was the first thing that stood out since she'd learned of her freakishness at the tender age of 12. She'd sat in the garden of her parents' country manor, making a flower grow. She'd put the seed in the earth, and then she'd concentrated on it really hard, willing it to grow. And it had, in the space of seconds. The maid had seen it first. "Miss Lizzie, what are you doing?" "I'm making the flower grow." After that, she'd been lost. It had been her first try manipulating time, and it had opened a door somewhere inside of her, leaving her wide open for time to flow through her, forward, backward, sideways, in damn swirls. Some days she lived 100 times, some not at all. Her life was a blur of days, minutes, hours, and seconds, all wrong and messed up, and the only constant was mistrust, fear, disgust, and hatred. And then he came. His gift was more subtle than hers. He healed like a hero of legend, and his senses were like that of a wolf, and his face stood out in every single one of her days, giving her something to focus on, something to cling to. And the flood of time subsided until it was a slowly trickling river that flowed at the back of her mind, gently. But that wasn't the most important thing. No, what really mattered was that he was like her. Different. She was, as far as she ever knew, the first, and he was the second. The thought that there might have been more, killed by fearing parents or hating mobs, was not one she ever lingered on. She was the first, he was the second. He loved her and she loved him. She was a city girl, but she lived with him in the cold woods of wherever he took them, because they belonged together in a world that moved ever faster, and he kept her safe. She was an 18th century girl, and he was a 19th century boy, and together they made things work, somehow. And when the others started popping up on the radar, they sometimes left their icy domain to help, to protect, to teach. Control, tolerance, peace, those were their lessons, and they taught them well. Well enough that two of their students, two boys they helped when there was no one else left to take on the task, took over from them. Eric and Charles were down somewhere in New York, starting a school even now. So Lizzie and Logan returned to the land of snow and ice, and they spent days in front of the fireplace and played hide-and-seek in the woods, which she always lost, even if she slowed time around him down to a trickle. He always caught her in the end and dragged her home. Except that one time when he didn't. She spent the whole day hiking around the woods, waiting for him to drop to the ground before her and grin roguishly at her. She waited and waited, and eventually she decided to turn back because it was getting late. Too late. She twisted time with a flick of her wrist, speeding it up around herself. She was home within minutes. She was home, standing in front of a door that was kicked off its hinges, looking in on a room that was torn to pieces, smashed and shattered. She stood in the doorway of her home, staring at the destruction inside, waiting for him to come out of his hiding place and yell, "Gotcha!" Only he never did. So she stood there, wordlessly, and she felt colder than she ever had before. Part 3. Swear words. "Damn it!" Charles snarled, as he lost his concentration yet again, slipping from the rodent's mind despite his best effort to hold on, to stay inside and make the animal do as he ordered. He didn't like it, but Lizzie said he needed to know his limits. If he had enough power to take away a person's free will, he needed to know that. Lizzie didn't like surprises. Logan winked at him once and said it was because she squeaked like a scared mouse every time she did. Charles wasn't quite sure he believed that, convinced that Lizzie's skittishness at times had to do with her strange powers, but he didn't ask. Getting information out of his two teachers was like trying to get Eric to tell a joke. But right now, there were more pressing matters. The fact that his outcry had broken Eric's concentration, for one, making him lose control over the electromagnetic field he'd been trying to shape into a cubic form. The field blew outward in an impressive wave of transparent blue energy, blowing up from the tray of china on the table, followed closely by the table itself. Shrapnel splinters of wood exploded in every direction, shooting toward the two young men, both too startled to move out of harm's way when suddenly everything stopped. The tidal wave of destruction hung in midair, shattered table suspended by nothing and no one, a morbid still life frozen in time. Lizzie entered the room glaring, hands on her hips, giving both young men dirty looks. Logan hung in the doorway behind her, like smoke and shadows, watching with a smirk on his face. "How many times do I have to tell you you have to control yourself better? Both of you! Cursing a rat helps nothing, Charles, and getting distracted by someone talking is pretty poor form, Eric. Besides, that's my favorite china you two just ruined." Eric glared. Charles shrugged, knowing he'd made a mistake but not really seeing the point. "So you'll just rewind it and everything will be fine." Logan snorted as Lizzie huffed, throwing her long blonde hair over one shoulder. "That's not the point," she announced, even as she started forward, waving one hand in a fancy motion. The frozen explosion started moving again slowly and in reverse, splinters joining, pieces flying together and seamlessly melting into one again. The three men watched, forever fascinated by the tiny blonde's gift. They never grew tired of watching her rewind time, never failed to laugh when she came stumbling into the kitchen in the morning, looked around, grumbled something about wrong days, and promptly left again, never once even looking at them. She waved both hands in a cutting motion as soon as everything was whole and unbroken again. "Eric?" He nodded, retaking control over his field of energy and quickly snuffing it in the timeless space she'd created for it. Catastrophe averted. Logan came strolling into the room now, wrapping his arms loosely around Lizzie's waist, resting his chin on her shoulder. "Nice work," he commented, not sounding like he'd expected anything else. Lizzie agreed, leaning back into his brace before adding, "And now we can go shopping." Dutifully, Logan sighed, rolled his eyes, and then dragged her out of the room by the hand, not minding half as much as he pretended to. He was, both Eric and Charles agreed, totally Lizzie whipped. Not that they weren't, but then she tended to freeze them in timeless bubbles when they annoyed her, so that was understandable. Exchanging looks, they both shrugged helplessly and returned to their work. Or at least, tried to, in Charles' case. "Eric? What now? Have you seen my rat?" Part 4. No words. Charles Xavier is a knower of minds. Some people sample wine, taste them, evaluate them. He does the same with minds. He hardly remembers a time when he has not slipped almost automatically into a person's mind to catch just a hint of their essence, of who they are. It might not always be the nice thing, the proper thing to do, sneaking in people's heads without their knowledge, but he can't really control it after so many years. Since childhood, he has been trained by two wonderful people to use his skill, to use it right and to use it good, to not abuse it and not give in to the bitterness like Eric did. He thinks sometimes that he is not stronger than Eric because he resisted. He is merely duller. Into how many thousands of heads has he looked into his life? Too many. And there was darkness in every single one. He's known the evil inherent in man for as long as memory serves. He didn't learn to hate it. He learned instead to search for the sunny places in a person's mind, for the balance. Most days he finds it. Still, Charles is a knower of minds. Everyone tastes differently. Aurora is calm and deep as the ocean. She has no hate, only sadness. If her mind had a color, it would be dark blue. He finds peace there whenever she allows him in. Scott's mind is, perhaps, of all his students' minds, the most ordinary. His powers have not set up shop in his psyche. Jean, and teaching, and saving the world keep him happy, balanced, until he has a bad night and memories come. Jean is more complicated, layered, a maze of the hidden and forbidden, and he feels guilty every time he sets foot in it because he's the one who made it so. Her mind is red. Eric's is not like one might have expected, a twisted labyrinth of hate and rage. He has flushed the hate out a long time ago, has distilled his rage. He can think clearly. He can plan and process. He doesn't let his emotions get in the way. All those minds are interesting, but they are far from the most fascinating he has ever seen. No, the most fascinating, the most complex and beautiful minds he has ever found were also the first he slipped into. Lizzie's was wonderful. Like a carnival of loops and hoops, swirls and twirls, Lizzie was never quite sane, and her mind was proof of that. Some moments repeated endlessly inside her head, while others, weeks or even months, were completely missing. Nothing about Lizzie was linear or logical. She jumped from one point to another, all over the place, and she was old. As a teenager, he didn't quite understand just how old she was, but now, as he feels his own age creeping up on him, he does. Centuries lived inside of Lizzie, and every year leaves a mark. A child's mind is small, with few memories, and the older a person grows, the more memories they have. The bigger their mind becomes, the larger their treasure chests and rooms of memories. The other mind that still fascinates him to this day is Logan's. Not quite as old as Lizzie. His mind was nevertheless a maze of recollections that seemed endless because of his enhanced senses. Color, sound, smell, texture became an endless ocean of sensation for Logan, and through him for Charles. His mind was dark and warm and cozy and full of sensual impressions, memories, and Lizzie. Lizzie and Logan had always been each other's focus, until the day Logan disappeared and Lizzie came to Charles in his sleep, called for his mind, and told him that Logan was gone. That was 20 years ago, and he has heard nothing of either of the two since then. It's why he thinks of them in the past tense. Hope, he has learned after Eric, is a fickle thing. Knowledge is better. Knowledge doesn't betray you. It doesn't play you for a fool. But he's rambling. Lizzie and Logan, they were each other's focus. Logan was Lizzie's anchor, the one thing binding her to the here and now of everyone else. He was the line she clung through year after year after year. He made sense of her world. And to Logan, Lizzie was all the beauty in the world, all the miracle and hope and joy and light and happiness. She was his heart and breath and food and drink. Logan wanted, for as long as Charles knew him, to crawl inside Lizzie and never be anywhere else again. That's how much they loved each other. Charles knows all this because he is a knower of minds, and once he knows a mind, he never forgets it again. And so it comes as quite a shock when he suddenly feels the familiar tingle of a mind so much older than all others, at the edge of his own, coming closer. Scott and Aurora, as well as another mutant, are close to it, messing with what he senses, but he could never get this one wrong, could never not notice it in a crowd. Because it's old and deep, and feels like cigars and booze, long nights and infinite patience with just a hint of wilderness underneath. It feels like crazy love for a crazy girl and 200 years of memories. Except, it doesn't. The crazy love is still there, but he's forgotten who he feels it for, and the memories, there are so few of them. Young memories in an old mind. Charles shakes his head, slips away from the approaching minds, refuses to believe. He must be getting confused in his old age. It can't be. It can't. That would mean... it can't be. Hours later, Logan comes stomping into his office, grumpy and stubborn and smelling of cigars and wolf and not of Lizzie, and he glares at Charles with a look that's all too familiar and no spark of recognition in his eyes. This Logan does not know Charles. This Logan does not remember teaching him and Eric, taking them out to get drunk for the first time. He does not remember helping to build the school. And what is possibly the worst thing, he does not remember the crazy girl he loves. Charles sits in his wheelchair, staring across his desk at this old friend, and he has no words to speak. The end.